Welcome to the second of a multi-part series on concepts about SQL Server that all developers should know. I'm Jim O'Neill, a developer evangelist at Microsoft's Northeast District. If you didn't catch the first session of this series, don't touch that dial. The sessions aren't dependent upon each other, so you can catch that one at another time. As you can see here, that first segment delved into the use of the SQL CLR as reason number 5. But now we'll look at reason number 4, SQL injection, just say no. SQL injection is certainly not new, and many of you may have run across this comic, courtesy of XKCD. The strip demonstrates one type of SQL injection attack, known as a first-order attack, in which a shortcoming of the application's implementation was exploited to delete a table in the database. There are a few other types of injection attacks, including a second-order attack, which is where a bad seed is planted that doesn't manifest itself until a later time, perhaps as a result of accessing a specific table or executing a procedure at a later date. Blind attacks are when the results of the attack are not immediately visible. That is, there isn't a specific error message returned, but rather a friendly error page results. And through tweaking the SQL that is injected, by adding a where clause that forces evaluation to true or false, information is gleaned to lead the hacker to a more direct first or second order attack. Truncation attacks, the last bullet you see here, refers to cases like buffer overrun, where the attacker takes advantage of silent failures if a T-SQL command buffer's length is exceeded. Let's take a look at the classic case of SQL injection a bit further, just to make sure we're all on common ground here. Here's a simple query in which the where clause is constructed by concatenating information provided by the user in a web forms application. With this, an evil user can literally enter something like Bobby apostrophe semicolon drop table foo dash dash into the form. That results in the execution of SQL similar to what you see here. And as you can see, what results are really two distinct statements. The first returns a reasonable result that doesn't arouse suspicion, but the second deletes the entire classes table. The point here is, of course, that if an attacker finds a way to concatenate an apostrophe semicolon sequence like this to legitimate data entered by an unsuspecting user, significant data loss and downtime can easily result. Luckily, such attacks are relatively easy to prevent. Here is that same query rewritten to take advantage of SQL parameterization. When evil user tries to carry out his sinister plot this time, what results is SQL that looks a little bit more like this. The parameterization of the where clause causes the user's input to be essentially escaped, and the apostrophe that the hacker entered to terminate the first query is merely another character in the input data, along with the drop table attempt. There's probably not a student with that specific name, so the user will see an empty result set, which may be a bit puzzling, but at least the integrity of the application and data store remains intact. Some of you are probably thinking, well, SQL injection is nothing new. It's so 90s, and everyone knows appropriate techniques to protect their code. It certainly won't happen to me. Prior to last March, that's likely what a number of the nearly 500,000 site owners affected by a SQL injection attack thought. This attack, launched in China, specifically targeted ASP sites with SQL Server as the back end. I happen to know firsthand since one of the sites I managed for an educational institution was hit, the door left open by some freeware forum software I'd incorporated into my site. Notice in particular the reference at the bottom right. Even an antivirus vendor wasn't immune. And that's not all. A simple web search will yield other sites found susceptible to SQL injection attacks years ago, and some of those sites still retain that vulnerability today. What should you do and not do to reduce your vulnerability? Well, don't help the potential hacker by providing error messages. How many of you have seen sites where you get an error like connection to database failed, and you see the entire connection string, and even a user ID in the default error page? And don't trust input data. Client-side validation of data is great for the end user experience, but don't presume that that data gets to the server in the same pristine state. Likewise, you don't want to transmit sensitive data in clear text, but don't store it that way either, because if someone does get in through a back door, your data is their playground. To safeguard your site and assets, subscribe to the principle of least privilege. Make sure the identity that is executing the SQL on the server has exactly the privileges needed, and no more. You don't want that ID hijacked and used to carry out more pernicious deeds in your database. Another do. As we saw on the slide earlier, use parameterization for SQL queries. And if you can't because of application constraints, use the replace T-SQL method to do programmatic escapement. And finally, validate, validate, validate. Not only your data, but also your storage requirements to thwart buffer overrun and truncation attacks. There's a number of tools out there to help assess your vulnerability, not only to SQL injection, but to other potential threats, such as cross-site scripting attacks. The SQL injection episode last spring led to a collaboration between HP and Microsoft to provide some free tools to help owners shore up their properties. These include Scrawler from HP and the Source Code Analyzer and URL Scan from Microsoft. There are a host of commercial tools as well, covering quite a range of capabilities and costs. And there's a few compendia out there listing free and for-purchase scanners and tools to help. Lastly, I've included some great educational resources that even allow you to play the role of a hacker, thereby gaining better insight into how attacks can be staged so you're better armed to prevent them. That brings us to the end of this short screencast. I hope you'll join me for the other sessions in this series, but for now I'll leave you with the words of Sergeant Phil Esterhaus.
Let's be careful out there.